Welcome to the Let Me Explain podcast, where we are speaking to all the party leaders throughout the campaign. And today, it's Pat or Tobin. Let Me Explain.
Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening, and you can go back to find the other party leaders we've done so far, the Micheál Martin episode, the Ivana Bacsik episode, and the episodes on the manifestos in your feed. We're talking to you now from Dublin City Centre, from Pier Street, where we have just seen the launch of AIN2's manifesto, and the party leader, Pádraig Tobin, is with me. Pádraig, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks very much.
How's the campaign gone for you so far? We're kind of into that stage where everyone is just like empty-eyed and wrecked.
It's going very, very well for us now, to be honest. We're getting a massive response at the door, and the polls are looking good for us as well. And definitely we're making a breakthrough just in terms of issues that we're pushing at the moment. So we're focusing on, first of all, the issue of housing and practical steps of getting a lot of the empty homes back into use. We're focusing on the issue of accountability. There's been such phenomenal wastes by the government over the last while. They've been incinerating people's money, and we've been just looking at practical ways to make sure that there is accountability and responsibility built into the system.
Let's start with that, so, because you're talking about a junior minister now dedicated to that, that will have powers that involve sanctioning civil servants. How would that work?
Yeah, so first of all, we need to make sure that there's a junior minister with just responsibility for dealing with waste, located in the Department of Taoiseach, reporting to the Taoiseach on a weekly basis, so that the Taoiseach is on the hook also for the issue of waste. And we want to see written into the contracts of senior civil servants that they have a responsibility for minding the public purse and a responsibility for not allowing for waste to happen. Now, we know that this, listen, decisions have to be made, and we're not talking about tying people up in knots here, but we're just saying that in normal society, in any other, let's say, private business across the country, if an individual is responsible for massive waste, there's no doubt in my mind you have a disciplinary procedure that would, you know, include a sanctions of some sort up to and including a loss of a job. And you know, it happens all the time in the private sector, and I just can't understand why we think that senior civil servants, many of them on hundreds of thousands of euros, should be immune from that.
So who would be overseeing that then? Who is going to decide, say if a SecGen you don't think is doing their job, is it the minister? Because the minister obviously has a temporary role. Who's involved in that?
Yeah, so for example, you know, these projects start usually at the tendering process stage. So tenders that are written too loosely, like the Children's Hospital and even like the Maternity Hospital tender, which I've seen, they often have a lack of specificity in it, which means that they're loose and that you can actually have a lot of maneuverability in terms of costs. So, you know, we want to make sure that we get to a standard where those tender documents are far more, they're tightened up in terms of deliverables, so that there isn't a blank check for a construction company in the future to be able to take more money from the state. And we also need to make sure then that procurement is happening, you know, in a reasonable style. So there is this kind of Gucci instinct in Leinster House and in the senior elements of the public service. And that was seen in the bike shed there, for example. Like the OPW came up with the price of 330,000 euros for that particular project. It wasn't as a result of the people who tendered first. So we do need to get into that realization that we have to save money in practical, let's say, elements. But then as well, I want to review over the whole planning process, over the whole regulation process, because while regulation is good in many circumstances, you can have a little bit of a system whereby regulation is like a pendulum. Over time, you just have more layers and more layers of regulation, and then at other times there's not enough regulation. We need to get into that kind of Goldilocks situation to make sure that we have regulation to protect, but also that it's not costing massive elements. So that kind of junior minister will be able to go through all of that aspect to make sure that the regulation is not holding back proper spending of money.
One of the other measures in this is financial incentives to attract people back to Ireland. Would they be targeted at certain professions? Is it certain age groups you're trying to get back? How would you focus?
Yeah, so there's a number of professions, usually frontline professions, that we're really in trouble with in terms of numbers. And that's leading to big problems in the health service. It's leading to big problems in Gardaí. Like, Australia employed more Gardaí last year net than the Irish government employed Gardaí, which is incredible. So what we're looking to do is to say, first of all, young people who have left Ireland to go to Canada or Australia, you have a future in this country. First of all, we will pay you proper pay and conditions, but also we will work hard in the housing crisis to make sure that you have access to a home. But in the meantime, we're looking for you to come home. We'll give you a grant of about $5,000 to help with transport and accommodation, and we'll give a $10,000 tax cut, tax relief over a period of 4 years if you work in that sector, to be able to settle in to Ireland. And also we're looking for exemptions that currently exist for construction workers within planning law for homes to be built for these types of staff. And one of the problems as well, especially in Dublin, is that it's becoming increasingly difficult for people who work for the public service, doctors, nurses and teachers and Gardaí, to be able to live anywhere near Dublin because of the cost of housing and rent. And we do believe that these exemptions should be located especially in urban areas too.
Yeah, how does that work? Is a certain amount of a new estate is put aside, like the Part 5? Like how, in practice, how does that work?
Well, in a practical sense, we would leave a flexibility for the government. So in some places, the government would have a block of land, which you could actually use under this situation. The government could look in relation to Part 5 to say, in certain areas, we need a number of homes for these areas, for these professions. And, you know, even in other parts of the country, there would be service lands, individual acres, etc., you know, that could be used to get a number of houses on as well. So I would look for the practical rollout of that.
On the cost of living then, there's quite a bit in this in relation to VAT, in relation to USC. What are the standout ones you want people to know?
Yeah, so first of all, there's no doubt that fuel is the big killer here for many people. The government have hiked up fuel on purpose, and this is like the frustration here is a lot of increase in the cost of living are outside of the control of the government. But the government have their hand over this lever and have actually jacked up the price of fuel purposefully over the last 4 years. 3.8 billion collected by the government in fuel taxes just in the last 12 months, the highest on record. So we're looking for the government to reverse an excise increase and to reduce to put a pause into the carbon tax increases into the future. We're actually also looking to help families with a 100 euro cap in relation on a weekly basis in childcare. We're looking at targeted a second child benefits, an additional child benefit that would be means tested, but will be focused on the 100,000 children who are living in poverty at the moment. We're looking for the child benefit to be provided to mothers, 5 months before the arrival of the child, so that they can prepare for the costs in relation to that. We're also looking for help in terms of small businesses, especially electricity costs. So electricity costs are the highest here in Ireland. We want a 2-year moratorium on VAT on electricity currently, because this government is presiding over the ESB, which is making enormous hundreds of millions of euros of profit a year, and we can, I believe, as a state, to reduce the profit that comes into the ESB and reduce the VAT that's coming in terms of electricity prices for a 2-year period until energy costs settle down.
So effectively to freeze the prices?
To reduce the VAT. So in other words, there's still going to be international influences that we can't control in those, but the government's influences on the control of electricity, that we should actually reduce those for a small period of time.
And on the USC?
On the USC charge, we are looking for a reduction of the USC. We're looking to get rid of the USC under incomes of less than 50,000 euros a year, which would cost 1.9 billion euros. It was an emergency tax. We already have an income tax system, and we do need to make sure that everybody would benefit from the 50 grand and below reduction, but it would focus on low and middle income earners the most.
So you said in the press conference you're not in favour of the decriminalisation of drugs, as Fianna Fáil have said and some other parties are, but you are in favour of making pints cheaper. Is that not a contradiction in terms, in that alcohol is the biggest drug that most people consume in the country?
It is. First of all, there's no doubt that alcohol is a drug, and there's no doubt that it has enormous social impacts too. But we're not looking for an increase in the consumption of alcohol. We're looking for a change in the behaviour of alcohol. And I will say this, there is something to celebrate about the Irish pub. You know what I mean? The Irish pub is a key element of our culture, and it's dying on its feet around the country at the moment. And alcohol has been consumed, far more in isolation than ever before. And we would believe that a pint consumed in a pub is a healthier pint for a start, and that, it involves human interaction. And it's also got some level of, control, because typically a good barman or a good barwoman will actually make sure that they won't over feed a person in terms of alcohol as well. So that's important. And I will say, in rural Ireland, the pub is really, really important. I know towns where there's like 6 pubs have closed in the last 10 years, where the hotels have closed in the last 10 years, where you can't get a hot meal anymore. And like that's really gutting out those towns currently.
You are running candidates obviously across the country, only one TD at the moment. Do you think there will be more joining you in Leinster House?
I think there's no doubt. There's definitely a big support in relation to what we're doing. And like aim to have differentiated ourselves significantly from the political establishment. We've held the government to account, I believe, far more than any political party. The impact of one AIN 2 TD has been phenomenal compared to the other political parties. And, you know, we have been innovative. And a key element is we haven't been afraid to stand up to the political establishment. So the referendum's gone by. For example, the only political party that stood in that, you know, the hate speech bill, the only party that stood in relation to that. Issues such as the carbon tax on fuel, we're the only party to stand on that. Like, sometimes, I'll be honest with you, you know, if you want to know what Sinn Féin is saying in 6 months' time, or even the government are saying on issues in 6 months' time, just read what AIN2 are saying now. And, you know, it is incredible that we've been able to engender such influence in the political system. And I would just ask people, you know, in about 10 constituencies across the country, there will be a competition between an AIN2 candidate and a government candidate. If you spread your vote too thinly across all of the micro parties and all of the independents, there's a significant chance that the government will slip through. If you concentrate your vote on the one party that's listening to you, the one party that's standing up for you, there's a significant chance that we can achieve change in those. And 4, 5, or 6 AIN2 TDs in Leinster House will have an enormous impact.
Two final questions that we've asked to all the leaders. One, when we get to count weekend, polls are closed, there's nothing more you can do. Leaders often don't show up until late in the day. What do you do? What's your routine for count day morning?
Well, normally what I do is I live beside the hill of Tara, and I'm a big fan of exercise. I will get my children out and we'll take a big stroll, maybe an hour and a half, to oxygenate that brain, to wake it up and to just get rid of all of the crack of the election. So that's probably what I do in relation to it. In relation to the count, I tend to go into the count then straight afterwards, because there is a buzz around the count. You know, it's a blood sport, but it's seriously interesting. And normally then, usually later in the day, you know, I go for a pint, and that, you know, I enjoy that kind of bit of crack and relaxation at the end. And hopefully, you know, if we've got good news, I'll savour it even more.
Finally, what's one thing no one knows about Pellertamine?
I make cider.
My shocked face is lost on podcast. You make cider.
I do make cider. So I did make it this year because of the elections, but I normally make about 40 litres of cider on an annual basis. So I have my own apple trees, and I usually raid some neighbours' orchards as well, get about 2 bathfuls or 3 bathfuls of apples. We crush them, we get the juice out of them, we put them in buckets, we put yeast into them. And usually around Christmas then, they have, you know, got into a nice situation where they're fizzy and they've, as the saying goes, nothing added but time. They've mellowed out a little bit. And actually the day of making cider is great crack, because it takes about 7 or 8 or 9 people to make all of that cider. And it's just one of those things where everybody gets together and you make it, and then you get to give a few people a few bottles, and it's good fun.
There you go. There's something I never knew. That one, you make cider, and 2, there's no baths in the Tobin household for about 3 months because it's full
exactly.
of apples.
That's it.
Pat O'Tobin, leader of AIN2, thanks a million for joining us on the Let Me Stand podcast.
Appreciate it.